Hello, and welcome to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. This is where we look at various nutrition and fitness-related topics through the lens of application. We want to give you practical takeaways so that you can create your healthiest, best self backed by knowledge. Now, onto the episode with your host, Coach Lisa.
Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's solo episode, I'm going to talk you through some client case studies with the corresponding examples for how to quote-unquote solve them. Before we get into the episode, though, if you enjoy this podcast, please do me a favor, share it on your social media, hit the subscribe button, give me a rating or a review. I would really, really appreciate it. I, of course, also want to kind of catch you up on what's been going on in my life. As I'm recording this, as it is the beginning of March. You might be listening to this a couple months later, but I have just had a reasonably stressful or busy month. This time, not for the reason of travel, but more for the reason of personal things. So I specifically set this month aside to do egg freezing. And I spoke a little bit about it on Instagram, but I don't even want to make this a huge topic, although I know it might be interesting to some people. So if this is you, if you have questions about it, please do feel free to reach out to me and to ask how my experience with it was. But overall, I do always want to keep the content of this podcast really related to nutrition and training and some, of course, lifestyle and habit practices. And I realized that egg freezing or preserving fertility is not necessarily interesting for everybody. But just to give you a very broad, quick overview. Well, firstly, one of the reasons, I mean, I just turned 34. And over the course of the last year, it's really become more of interest to me, not because I think I really want to have kids. And I feel like my physiological clock is ticking. I actually don't think I want to have kids, or I'm 95% sure I don't want to have kids. However, in all the podcasts and research, etc., that I have been listening to and reading about, almost every physician was like, never say never. You just never know, of course, if there is, no physiological chance for you, or if you're like yourself 100,000 gazillion percent for certain, then that's a different thing. But I have learned one thing in life also, which is your life doesn't turn out the way that you think it will. I never thought that I would get divorced. I never thought that I would essentially, be a digital nomad and all these things. So your life just turns out differently, not necessarily worse or better or whatever it might be, but just differently. So you just never know. And I, for one, have decided for myself, and everyone needs to know that for themselves, that I wanted to at least keep the window open for a little bit longer because essentially, as we enter our 30s or even prior to that, our fertility just declines. So that was kind of the main reason. And then when I arrived here in Bogota, I did a little bit of research as to what the clinics are like here, if this is even in my budget, what it would entail when it comes to stress on my body and mental stress. And I decided for myself that it is something that I wanted to do. And so it basically starts off at the beginning of your cycle, and you start with, most of the time, just some pills, which essentially are, it's not really a birth control pill, but I mean, the goal is to get all the eggs that your ovaries release in a month, and these eggs are being released no matter what, so you're not like robbing your body of anything here. They're being released every month since the day you were created, essentially, as a woman. And even before you have your period, or even before you start ovulating, these eggs are being released. But once you start ovulating, then of course it's the body's goal to get one of these eggs to mature properly, at least one of these eggs. But this month, for the purpose of the egg freezing, we are trying to get all of these eggs to mature, and then take as many of them, or all of them, if possible, to be frozen. So essentially, this is the purpose of the medication. So I started off with a couple of pills for the first few days before then starting hormone injections in order to get all these eggs to grow at the same time without them actually maturing too early either. So this is what I had to do for the next 10 days, injecting myself subcutaneously, so just below the belly, In addition to taking some pills, I started feeling more bloated. But aside from that, it really was absolutely fine. I was able to train, no worries. And then from day six onwards, roughly speaking, your physician takes an ultrasound every second day, maybe some blood tests in order to determine how mature the eggs are, or if they need to adjust anything when it comes to the medication. And so then on day, what was it for me? Well, yes, day 10, I had to give myself what they call a trigger shot. So 36 hours before they plan to retrieve the eggs, you inject yourself with, well, in my case, I had to inject myself with two injections of gonadotropin to essentially signal the full maturation to your ovaries. So then 36 hours later on a Monday morning, I had to go to the clinic at 6:30 in the morning on an empty stomach with everything else. And they put you under anesthetics for a full anesthesia for only about 30, 40 minutes. For some people, it's less depending on how many eggs, of course, they're planning to retrieve. And they're doing that intravaginally, so you don't need to be cut open, basically with a with an ultrasound device. They attach a needle to that and poke your ovaries with that, and then suck out, for lack of a better word, or poke into the follicles, and then suck out the eggs that they want to retrieve. And then as soon as you wake up, they tell you the amount of eggs that they were able to retrieve. And again, like, if you're even falling into that category of like, hey, it's worth it, depends a lot on your what is called ovarian reserve. So like how, for your age, how many eggs do you have in each one of your ovaries being released each month? And they assess that prior to the whole procedure, prior to you starting everything and signing everything off, also by way of ultrasound, but also by way of AMH, which is a blood marker for that basically determines this ovarian reserve. So in any case, numbers are completely individual. So please, anything that I throw out here, take that with a grain of salt. But essentially, they were able to retrieve 27 eggs, and 13 of those were mature enough to be frozen, which is amazing. So they're now banked somewhere here in Bogota, and I can, they're frozen indefinitely, but I can access them at any time, even if I'm overseas, and having them shipped to like Europe or the US if I was to be living somewhere else in a few years' time. So that was the whole procedure. And on that Monday, I was quite groggy. I mean, of course, coming out of anesthesia, and they do give you quite a bit of painkillers. But so I worked from the couch, didn't do much else. But then the next day, I was already kind of feeling reasonably normal. I was still taking some painkillers, but I was already able to go for a nice walk. And then from Wednesday onwards, I was back in the gym doing some upper body work. Again, I actually prepared myself mentally for the worst time to be after that retrieval, because this is usually when the hormones, you have a huge drop in hormones. So oftentimes it's said this is kind of like PMS symptoms, but times 10, especially from an emotional perspective. But like literally, I had the best experience. So I'm not sharing this necessarily to promote egg freezing. I just want people to be aware of their option and maybe to start thinking about their future sooner than they think they need to. Because I feel like in our society, we tend to like put things off and just think like, oh, I've got time. But it's not always so easy to get pregnant straight away, or to, time kind of runs away from you at some point also. So I hope you you did enjoy hearing a little bit about this detour. So this was essentially, a good three weeks of the month of February for me. It was also my birthday month. So some fun things throughout that. And now I'm kind of preparing for a trip to Brazil, where a friend of mine is getting married. And on top of that, I'm trying to get my Colombian driver's license, which is funny. I've had a lot of driving experience in my life. I have a German driver's license and a New Zealand driver's license. But yeah, for some reasons, they're both not or expiring, so I need to get one if I want to be able to drive somewhere for the rest of the year, even when I travel. Anywho, let us get into this episode. I don't want to waste any more of your time. But I've prepared like 6 client examples for you, and I have had several clients that fit into each one of those categories, and maybe you can relate to one of them or multiple of them, and some of the tips that I give might help you as well. So the first one, I'm going to call her the social butterfly. She wants to lose 10 kg. She is super active, loves her training, has a super active social life, hence the name, not just personally, but also for work, eating out at least once, twice a week, traveling here and there. She has actually tracked macros, calories before, and has lost weight several times, but has never been able to sustain it. So my key for her has been focusing on the planning and moderation. This is someone who has no issues doing well when she's in her own environment, when she is, you know, basically during like a COVID lockdown, she would do absolutely fabulous just doing her own things. She has already been eating a higher protein diet, but it's really, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4 times a week drinking alcohol, eating out, 4 or 5 times a week, and so on. So what I really wanted to instill into this client is that tracking macros can be a sustainable solution, that it doesn't have to feel super restrictive. And why was I so adamant about that? Because it would help her see how much she would actually go over her calories when she was eating out, and also how to mitigate that. So not necessarily in the sense of, hey, we need to go on like a super low deficit here. On the contrary, like really, really focusing on moderation, so that also from her few more strict days at home, she wouldn't feel so deprived heading into her social settings thinking, oh, I'm just going to let loose and I want to have everything now type of thing. So the big thing I emphasize with her, please, like every time you have a social engagement, let me know. Every time you know the restaurant, let me know. Every time you have pre-planned a meal, let me know. Maybe you can even send me a food picture and I can double check your estimations. So yes, of course, especially initially that seemed and was a little bit more tedious, but she even says now, like, this pre-planning for a night out now takes her 10 minutes tops, and it gives her so much peace because she actually goes there. You know, you're going to spend 5 minutes at the restaurant usually anyway, looking at the menu, thinking about, oh, what am I going to have? What's everyone else having? But at least this way you already head there with somewhat of a plan or an actual plan. And you can just sit there, relax, knowing exactly when you're going to stop your drinks, knowing exactly, no, I'm not going to have any dessert because I already had a starter, or vice versa. You know what's coming towards you, which also actually sometimes helps you enjoy the social event more, focusing on the people more, on the conversations more, etc. And it actually did help her realize how alcohol would also affect her eating habits. And so she has now on her own decided she wants to keep or cap alcohol at 2 times per week as opposed to 4 nights or so. And I think this habit in and of itself is going to have such a long-term benefit for her in the sense of also longevity, cognitive health, sleep, and so on. So really huge, huge progress. And I think I'm just so amazed with our progress. Like, we're literally dropping 0.5 kilo or a pound every single week, even though the calorie deficit is not even super, super, super restrictive. So like on average, we're still at about 1800 or so calories per week, and she's still dropping. So that is showing her also, because one of her initial questions was actually, do I have to eat in a deficit for the rest of my life to maintain this? And I was like, no. You know, it's actually going to get even more fun, because initially in our strategy call, she even said, like, I definitely don't want to track for the rest of my life. And as we're progressing this, she's actually thinking, hey, this tool, I actually feel more liberated with that. And that's not to say everyone has to track for the rest of their life, but especially with someone who has such a strong social life, I usually always say, like, if when we transition with certain clients, out of macro tracking because they would like to eat more intuitively, it's not the weekend days that quote-unquote fall off first with tracking. It's usually the days where I'm like, hey, Monday, Tuesday, you basically eat the same anyway. Let's just not track those days, but track the rest of the week, because particularly when we're eating out, this is when the calories just add up. So super, super happy for the progress of the social butterfly and her keys. Just as a reminder, we're planning and moderation. Now, let's move on to client case example number two. Her title is I've Tried Everything. So this person, I love her dearly, like all my clients, but she just came to us with so many limiting beliefs. Like, I have these hormonal issues. And of course, yes, her hormones are actually, you know, a little bit of a... Yeah, I sometimes refer to it as a small handbrake. You know, it's not a full break, but it does make things more tricky as you're progressing through perimenopause and menopause. She's insulin resistant. She had a lot of emotional personal trauma in her background as well, which she was so kind to share with me. So all these things, and quite often they come up. So like, for instance, she might go out for dinner and she's like, oh yeah, you know, I have this personal trauma because of that, like eating out is still a little bit of a time for me to like bond with people, and I just don't want to think about anything else. I'm like, okay, they're all facts. Like, you've had these traumas, you have, you know, your hormones might be out of balance from time to time, you do occasionally have problems, which we're working on, in terms of blood sugar regulation, all facts. But telling yourself that this is the reason why things are hard is not going to help at all. It's turning into excuses. And that became quite evident after a while, because I don't think she ever realized that consistency was actually her main problem. So it would turn out to, yeah, you know, 3-4 really great food tracked days, and then repeatedly every week, 3-4 non-track days because of, you know, I wasn't feeling good because of my hormones, because of, I had a really down day for my personal trauma, etc. So the key was really almost telling her or opening her eyes to the fact that, I hate to break it to you, but you're not special. We all like, somehow there's something comforting about thinking you're special, you're different, your case is more special than other people's, but like, you're not special in the sense that almost everyone struggles with consistency and would move faster with more consistency. And so like, almost holding that mirror up to her and just being like, you might have a lot of issues and background problems, but this is not what's holding you back. What's holding you back is using those as excuses, and you could get over that by focusing more on consistency. So the key for her was tracking every single day. So I say this to my clients all the time. I do not, oftentimes, especially in the beginning, I do not even care if I see a 2,500, 3,000 calorie day, whatever, like literally, or, you know, a whole jar of peanut butter eaten or so. I would rather see that in your food log and you knowing that your head stayed in the game, then you just switching off completely, not tracking anything for 3-4 days, leaving us in the blind. And then I kind of have to guess, like, okay, what was her weekly average calories? Was she like still around her prescription and our weight is stagnant because of something else? Or was she actually like way over protein, way under? Like, this has been such a key for her, and she's actually been crushing it in that sense. And I haven't heard a quote unquote excuse from her in that sense in a really long time. And she's also someone who does travel quite frequently, like on the weekends, to go to places to visit children, etc. And like, really that foresight here on that front has also been super, super important, because again, like, she used to think like, oh, you know, this used to be a family bonding time, that means I cannot plan ahead and be consistent with my food. No, you can. You really, really can. So key, tracking every day, because tracking 3-4 days a week, we almost might not, you know, want to do anything anyway. Like, this doesn't really tell me all that much. So moving on to client number three, I'm going to call her the metabolically adapted. And I've been speaking a little bit more about metabolic adaptation or weight loss resistance on social media as well, as that is something I'm learning more and more about in a course that I'm currently taking. It's called Functional Nutrition by the Metabolic Mentor University. And it's been quite interesting. I mean, I've had people ask me how I find the course, if I would recommend the course. I will tell you more when I finish it. I've only signed up for level one. There is three levels to it. And I'm only about halfway through, so I'll let you know. So this lady, the metabolically adapted, she has a super, super stressful life. Stress with work, as we do all, I guess, stress with work, stress with kids. She has been under eating, and we have been in this kind of dieting, I don't really want to call it cycle, because she's not someone to binge eat. It might happen like every 2 months that she has a day where she can't adhere, and then she beats herself up and she just says, no, Lisa, I don't want to do a reverse diet. I just need to do better. I just need to be stricter. So this is kind of where we started off. Overstressed, overtrained, under eating, high protein, like reasonably high protein with like 130 grams, but yes, hardly reaching like 1200 calories most days, and nothing is happening to weight. So what do? We did finally have to have that conversation of like, don't you see eating less is not the answer? Like, we really can't, you know, go to 800 calories. And even then, your body probably wouldn't let you drop anything. You're just so in such a high chronic cortisol state that your metabolism has downregulated so much. And it's basically just trying to get you to survive. And therefore, not really burning all that much. So what we needed to do, and I didn't just want to reframe it as a reverse diet, because she's actually reverse dieted with a previous coach before, gained a bunch of weight and hated it. And she just said that's why she's been so opposed to reverse dieting for such a long time. But turned out that the way that they did it, it was really done wrong. Because what's also needed in this case is not just bringing calories up. It is also like, where are these calories coming from? Because we need to restore, we need to help your liver clean out or clean up with your hormones. We need to help your thyroid speed up the metabolism. We need to support your gut to burn more. So all these kind of things. So simply saying, oh yeah, we're going to do a reverse diet. Here's 200 extra calories. I don't really care where they come from. You can eat an extra Pop-Tart, cereal, whatever. That is how people in this scenario, especially if you increase the calories too quickly, put on the extra energy as body fat. So what's needed here, I mean, with 10 or with 1,000 or 1,200 calories, I don't blame her, but her fiber has been so, so low. Also, just because she does eat out a bit in terms of work and social life as well. So one of the tricks that we have been doing, along with slowly increasing her calories, is like really boosting her fiber. So even with the first increase up to 1400, I was like, okay, we need to make sure every single day you're somewhere between 20 or 25 grams of fiber. And then from there, like with every 100 calorie increase, basically another 5 grams. I really, really want to get this client, we've only just started with this process 2 weeks ago, I really want to get her to at least 40 grams of fiber in order to support all these systems, as I was saying, liver, thyroid, and just overall hormonal balance. Her HPA axis, so basically what is burnt out at the moment, her her cortisol regulator, if you will. So therefore also more healthy fats in order to help those hormones. So things more like whole eggs as opposed to just chicken breast all the time, or avocado and all these things. So really, even though it's hard for her to focus on the long term, but for her, the key really is food quality, overall food quality. This lady has no problem in regards to protein intake or even in regards to limiting herself, but actually we need to fuel her body and just really making sure that we're keeping her metabolism and hormones cranking, because that will allow you to eat as much as possible to get to your optimal or potential maintenance calories that you should actually be eating, as opposed to just 1200 and still maintaining your weight. Now, I have three coming up, which are kind of titled like Friends episode. I don't know if you're a fellow Friends fan, but anyway, you'll get what I mean when I get to them. So the first one is called The One with the Emotional Load. So she, again, even in our strategy call, really shared so beautifully and vulnerably with me what's been going on in her life. She's had a lot of issues with her ex-partner, with her kids that they're trying to co-parent, with her work and a colleague that was fired and giving her some grief and everything else. And as a result of that, she, of course, has been super stressed. In the past, she would, quote-unquote, deal with the stress with extreme exercise and actually not as much with the food, but more like being social and so on. But in the recent months, it's kind of turned more into eating more and, yes, being even more social and doing actually no exercises at all and drinking more alcohol. And this sometimes shows up as, again, another way to deal with problems or to, quote-unquote, escape. Also because it can initially feel like self-care. It can feel like, hey, I was just kind to myself. I gave myself grace. I wanted to take a couple of weeks off of training. I had such a hard work week or had this thing happening at week and at work. And then my girlfriends, you know, took me out for dinner and I just wanted to enjoy the moment and switch off. And that's, I needed that evening, that kind of thing. So while I am all about giving yourself grace, being kind to yourself and understanding with yourself, you will also know that I do think in the end, discipline is one of the highest forms of self-care. Boundaries are one of the highest forms of self-care. So starting with this angle and using it as a little bit of an excuse in the sense of I'm, you know, if you do that once a year or half a year where you're like, oh, I just, you know, gave myself grace, didn't really care, took a week off of doing anything, cool, that's absolutely fine. But if this week, if this excuse turns into a constant thing where you're just like, I'm going to be kind to myself, I've had a hard day, I'm going to turn to the ice cream, etc., it really is not serving you at all. So we need to shift that focus again on long term and find that, like in the first example also, find that moderation here and that balance between I'm going to be hard on myself and demand the most of myself while loving myself, and which when you want to do which in which form is so situation dependent. In her case, for instance, because she's a very central being, like someone who's very much in touch with their feminine, which is so beautiful to see. So instead of just saying like, I'm kind to myself, I'm going to order pizza tonight, or I just want to go to the restaurant and not really care about what I'm eating, I'm going to make this meal as beautiful visually and also something that I'm quote unquote craving, but that is healthy as possible. So even just like, especially for us women, having a beautiful meal to look at can actually make a really big difference where you're like, oh, I'm so excited about this. I'm going to put a little bit of a seasoning on top of that and then a little flour on the side and it's so colorful. And you can get really excited about that. And just even in the sense of I'm going to make meal prep fun, like asking her, what are you craving this week? And if it's something crappy, then just saying, how can we make that more healthful? So like if you're craving a brownie for your afternoon dessert, maybe we can make one where there is some beetroot in there and not as much sugar or protein powder or something like that instead. Or maybe if you are craving like a super greasy breakfast of eggs and bacon, maybe we can turn that into like half eggs, half egg whites with turkey bacon and still some vegetables in there. So just thinking of like, how can we make the things that we're craving still more beautiful, more healthful, and something that brings us joy that we're still looking forward to. But also on her front, really working on those boundaries and like reframing again and again and again that they are actually a form of self-care. So starting with boundaries with coworkers and with, of course, problematic relationships, totally. Like realizing even, or especially you're going to get pushback initially, but over time, people actually, I've said this numerous times before, actually respect you more for having boundaries. However, only if you own, if you stick with them. If you say you have boundaries and then you're a pushover, if you're like, no, I go to bed at 9 o'clock, and then 2 out of 4 times people can talk you into staying up until 11, that's not really a good example of setting boundaries. It just kind of tells people like occasionally you like to go to bed early whenever it suits you and it feels convenient. But, you know, so stick with your boundaries. And of course, to the second part, or going back to the earlier theme of saying like finding moderation for her, also instead of using exercise as a way to more or less beat yourself up, and yes, you're going to feel good afterwards because you're all sweaty and adrenaline rush and you've accomplished something hard, but making it more come from the place of self-love and looking at like, what do I feel like doing today? It could just be like, I'm going to move for 1 hour, 3 times per week, full stop. It doesn't mean you have to like really focus on progressive overload. Really, like, this is not a person where we're like really pushing the aesthetics here right now because everything else is 100% in place. We need to work on this with a long-term setting. And again, with the key of moderation, but in this sense, also finding that balance between being really hard, like discipline, and also giving yourself grace from time to time, but realizing that giving yourself grace still, like, you can go out with your girlfriends and still choose better or not drink the whole bottle of wine, and still that means being kind to yourself. Like, people always say when it comes to children and education on their front, it all makes sense to us. Like, no one would say like, oh, you know, I'm going to let my child eat everything because I love it so much, so they can just do whatever, stay up for however long. Realize, like, we all kind of logically know that instilling some discipline in them and having some rules for them, like bedtime, like, no, you need to eat your vegetables first before you can have dessert. It totally makes sense with kids. But then why don't we do that with ourselves? why don't we sometimes follow through with that? So, yeah, that's just a question I'm throwing out there, I guess. Client case study number 5, the one who doesn't actually want to be coached. This is funny and tough sometimes too. So those tend to be people that are coaches themselves, which we work with regularly, people that just have a good amount of background knowledge or overall experience when it comes to nutrition on themselves, or even nutritional recommendations that they might have given to others. And one thing those people have to realize, and often it's a good mirror to myself, like, how coachable am I actually? Because if you feel like you already know quite a bit in a field, you're going to approach things very differently than if you're kind of new to something. So I'm not saying at all that I don't want people to ask questions, and you'll hear more about that in my next scenario. But there is one thing of kind of knowing, like, I know everything better type of thing, and like, I just want you to explain this to me so that I can get back to you with why I actually think I know it better. And just asking for an explanation where you're like, hey, cool, thanks for the new macros. Can you explain why we increased carbs and not fats? Or why are you recommending 500 grams of ashwagandha and not just 100? Or, like, you know, something like that. That is cool. I love questions like this. But this kind of client who doesn't actually want to be coached, she's actually also someone who, like, makes suggestions as to when to change something or why. Like, oh, I'm feeling kind of bloated, and as you saw, like, weight kind of went up a little bit at the beginning of last week. I think we should be doing a cut sooner than what we actually planned on. And I would love it if we could only cut from carbs because of XYZ and blah, 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 blah. So that kind of thing. And I have had some really negative experiences with clients like that in the sense of I let them push me around too much. And then at the end of a coaching, so one of those clients, and this was like 3 years ago, so it's still kind of reasonably early on in my coaching career. And then she handed in her resignation and she was like, I felt like you would only do what I wanted to do. And I wasn't actually getting anything from my money. And I was like, actually, she's right. And I mean, this is, again, another fine line that we really have to find as coaches, but also as clients, where we find we have a good way of communicating. What is your goal? What do you want to get out of this? You asking questions. But in the end, I, the coach, am still the one who's going to lead and come up with the executive decision. This is what you're paying me for. And that can be hard, especially if you have a deep underlying belief, which you might not be communicating as well, or if you are a control freak like me as well. But the benefits from coaching only really come if we allow someone else to lead us. There is no point of, hey, I'm going to go into this this city tour. I kind of know the city already, so I'm just going to go wherever. And then kind of ending up or hoping I'm going to end up where everyone else is or where I said the target was. Like, why are you even signing up for this tour if you think you already know the way there? And yes, part of it of coaching is accountability. But if you don't trust your coach or look at your coach as someone that you can trust, that you can look up to, that you want to put your worries in their hands, because that's what they're there for also, then like, why are you even signing up for coaching? And I've literally had these conversations before where I said, I get you want to change this and that. I'm going to say we stick with the original plan because of X, Y, Z. I know you're probably kind of feeling in your head about this and that, and you're feeling fluffy right now. Maybe you can explain once again, or if you're not on board with what I'm suggesting, please let me know why, and we can talk about some alternative situations. But the communication aspect here is so important. Like, if you're just like, okay, thanks, and then you're secretly thinking Lisa is such a bitch, why is she never listening to anything that I'm saying? Like, this would never work in an actual relationship, you know, with a spouse either. You, like, if someone's suggesting something and then you're like, yeah, whatever, and you just turn away and walk away. Like, I want to have a proper conversation about this. But in the end, I do need to know, like, why did you sign up? Because, again, I can only be your leader if you let me lead. If we try to pull on different strains, or if you think you know everything better anyway, I might not be the right coach for you. I sometimes in those scenarios also say, I understand you've come from a low carb, high fat background, for instance, but can you just trust me for 6 weeks and follow exactly what I'm doing? And if after this adjustment period you feel worse or you're still on the same page, then let's readjust, let's reframe this. But I believe that with this approach, this and this and that is going to happen from my knowledge and experience. So if you can see that a little bit in yourself, then maybe also just allow yourself to take a step back from that and be like, okay, do I actually want to be coached? Or like, how can I get the most out of coaching? Because this is not the way how. So this brings me to my last client example, which I titled The One Who Loves to Learn. And of course, I love this client. Like I said, I love all my clients, even the previous ones. The One Who Loves to Learn. So again, the difference here, she wants to understand everything. She wants to just know the mechanisms behind things. So she asks a lot of questions. She might also ask for a lot of help. And it's really coming more from a place of curiosity rather than second guessing what I'm assigning. And it's not my pride that's standing in the way here. It's like literally the difference of what she wants to get out of coaching as well. And of course, we're generally going to have more questions if we're less experienced, if we're new to something. But that doesn't mean that even the more experienced person couldn't be that, turn into that person, like that coach, you know, if she, like, she could be asking, hey, why did you drop calories by 180. I'm usually someone in our coaching practice that we drop it only 90 at a time or whatever. Could you explain that to me? Very different approach than saying, I think we should be dropping by 90 after all type of thing. The thing that I will mention, and I've said this before on the previous client case example episode that I've done, we as coaches, we don't know what you don't know unless you say so. So we here don't have a curriculum that we take people through. This is not a nutrition course. It's nutrition coaching. So it is individual based, right? And that means I cannot give everybody the same and be like, okay, on week 3, I'm going to talk to this person about how we can support the liver the best. On week 7, we're going to talk about mindset, that type of thing. It doesn't work that way because it might also not have come up for you as important in that week. And we literally have some clients for half a year or 9 months. We work on almost nothing other than getting them to eat a couple more vegetables and trying to hit their protein intake, because this is literally where they're starting. And then we have other clients that try to soak up everything and that follow your things to a T. And in those instances, I'm like, okay, you as a client also need to think about goals, not just in the sense of what do I want to get out of this aesthetically, but what do I want to more know about? And these things often come as you go on, but make note of them. Like, okay, I was really bloated for these few days or after eating this and that. Is that because of eating this and that, and why? Is that because of something with the bacteria going on? You know, like, note those things and mention them in your check-in or even throughout the week. We love frequent communication. The more frequent communication, the better usually the results and the more people get out of it. So we don't know what you don't know unless you say so. I cannot just assume everyone knows the basics and I'm going to start really high up. I cannot just assume everyone knows nothing and tell every person about, hey, this is a calorie. So please get more clear on your goals. Make notes throughout the week. Make notes about things that you want to get out of the coaching. If you're like, hey, I'm signing up for a year, by the end of this, I want to know. I literally have had clients like that came up to me and were like, yes, I want to lose, 10 kilos. I'm going to sign up for a year in advance. And I want to talk about how to adjust things as I age. I want to talk about how to adjust things when I go through stressful periods of time. All of this, I loved it because I could make a note. And then whenever I thought it was suitable throughout this entire year, I'd be like, hey, we spoke about stress. So this was a really stressful week for you. How about I get now into how we can adjust things accordingly? So the key here would be communication, and also reflect for yourself on a regular basis, like how you can get the most out of the coaching. So I guess to sort of not really summarize, but I guess give you some takeaways from these 6 client case examples, the overall mechanism would be, in order to support your weight loss and maintenance the best, support your thyroid, support your metabolism, and support your digestion. Even though we're all about, you need to be in a calorie deficit, you should be eating sufficient protein, you should be eating 80-90% whole foods, most people still kind of overlook that 80-90% whole foods. And even within that, there are more ways to support your thyroid, your metabolism, your digestion. You're just going to make it easier for yourself long term. And in the end, you're probably going to be able to eat more calories while maintaining your goals. And the second, more sort of mindset related thing is, everyone, work on your consistency, on your planning, and your moderation. These are the 3 kind of habit keys that are absolutely crucial to reaching and maintaining your goal. And in order to finish off this episode, I just want to leave you with a quote, which I have shared on Instagram before, but I just think it's such a good quote. And this is by Neil Ayad, who also wrote an awesome book, which is called Indistractable, which I've done a Monday motivation episode about. But the quote is the following: the antidote to impulsiveness is foresight. This might not be sounding like a super meaningful quote to you. However, next time you're inconsistent, think about this. The antidote to impulsiveness is foresight. So essentially planning in order to get consistent if this is something that you struggle with. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this client case study example episode, the second one, there's another one in, I think maybe that I did a year ago or so. So go and check that one out if you haven't done so. If you're not following us on social media yet, make sure you do so. And of course, subscribe to the podcast. I really appreciate you being here and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, or share the episode on social. Very much appreciated. You can also follow us on Instagram at Nutrition Coaching and Life, or head to our website, www.nutritioncoachingandlife.com, where we provide more valuable content. Have a wonderful day. Now go out and work on your best self.